Welcome to the Pro Photographer Journey Podcast, your resource for building the photography business of your dreams. This is Shamira Young, bringing you tips, business strategies, and interviews with award-winning photographers. We're all in this together. Let's get to the good stuff. Hey, everybody. I'm here with Skip Cohen. Now, Skip is the president of Skip Cohen University, founder of Marketing Essentials International, and past president of Rangefinder Publishing and WPPI. He's been an active participant in the photographic industry since joining Hasselblad USA in 1987 as president. He's co-authored 6 books on photography, he actively supports dozens of projects every year, and he is taking over the world. Skip, how are you?
Taking over the world.
Yes, world domination.
Now, if I was really trying to go for world domination, I wouldn't have this smile on my face every morning. I'd be totally aggravated. I don't want world domination. In fact, most of us don't want to deal with what's going on in the world. So, yeah, no, I'll pass on the world domination. True. I'll just take domination of my front and backyard and a very, very small piece of beach where we stick our chairs down here in Osprey, Florida.
So, rub it in.
That's it.
Rub it in. You know,
hey,
here in
Michigan.
I grew
up in the Midwest.
Yeah, so you know the pain. We've got a rainy day, not a spot of sun in the sky. I would imagine in Florida right now, it's pretty awesome now that the hurricanes are gone.
Yeah, but that's also where you get your 18% gray.
That's true. Oh, good stuff.
Or sometimes you might get 16%. Other times you might get 22%.
That's true. You get a lot of gray.
That's it.
Heck of a lot of gray. Well, I am thrilled to have you on the show. And it's such a privilege just to be able to chat with you and, you know, for you to be willing to chat with us. Now, I'm able to chat with you on a somewhat regular basis since we do some projects together. But for those who don't know much about you, as you like to say, for those who are living under a rock somewhere, could you tell us a bit about your background and how you ended up doing what you're doing today?
Oh, my God. I'll try and do the short version, but there are some pretty funny components. I mean, if we really go back to my education and background in photography, I was in the photo club in high school. I had a part-time job working for the local newspaper, which was engraving, making the engravings for black and white, which back in those days, you know, you had to get a print with a lot of contrast. You put it on a drum. It got essentially scanned, and the light and the dark gave you bigger and smaller dots by heat on a cylinder next to it, and boom, it went off to the press, and that's what they use for the printing. So I've always had a passion for photography, but never anticipated it was going to be a career choice. And essentially, and you and I have talked about this a couple times on and off, I mean, going off to college, I was every parent's nightmare. I had absolutely zero maturity. I had no right to go to school. I went to Miami of Ohio, I grew up in Ohio, and Miami was a great school and hard to get into. My grades were so-so, but I'd been very active in high school and was president of student council and did a bunch of other stupid things that, or they didn't seem stupid then, but as I look back on them now, there are other things that I wish I had done. But in any event, I go off to college and I have terrible study habits. It is where I first started to learn salesmanship because my parents lived about 300 miles north at the other end of Ohio. If I had a car on campus, I could come home more often. And they never checked, but you weren't allowed to have a car on campus. I was paying $10 a month to this little motel in Oxford, Ohio, to keep my car behind the motel.
Oh, that's great.
Then I convinced them that it was too noisy in the dorm to study. And if I had an apartment, so sophomore year, I had an apartment, and I found a grad student to share the place with. And he and I had this great little place, but you weren't supposed to be an apartment. You weren't allowed to have an apartment till your junior year. So when it came to bending rules, just to be a selfish, obnoxious college kid, I did it. That's also back around Vietnam. College was a deferment. I was in that first lottery. In fact, my number was 297 when they drew the first lottery. And I obviously wasn't going to get called into duty. And had an awful lot of friends that served in Vietnam and have total respect for the military. In fact, Sheila and I have a son who's a lieutenant colonel with the Army today and very proud of him. But back then, I was just an obnoxious college kid. If I liked the course, I'd get an A in it. If I hated the course, I never bought the book. And eventually, on and off probation several times, Miami of Ohio said, go away. And I did, and I went away, and that's kind of where my career started, because my girlfriend at that time lived in the Boston area, and I decided I was leaving Ohio and packing everything I owned up, which was made up of half dozen pairs of underwear, a few pairs of jeans, a guitar, my tape recorder. Yes, everybody, reel-to-reel tapes.
I remember
those. And off I went to Boston. Well, we had a friend there that a neighbor in Ohio had grown up with, who got me a job in Polaroid, $2.89 an hour, washing all the bottles I could in the lab. And that's where let's just say it's a long time ago. So I stayed with Polaroid for 17 and a half years and absolutely loved the company, went back to school. I was more mature at that point. Truthfully, I should have gone into the Army right out of high school, because that would have given me the discipline. Doing something in the military would have helped me focus and understand what I wanted to do for my future. So instead, I went off to work at Polaroid and just had a great career there. I started going to school, went back to school nights at Boston University, took as many courses as I could in primarily marketing, business. One was in public speaking. And 17 and a half years later, I get a cold call from a headhunter. At that point, I was the photo specialty dealer for that particular channel. Polaroid had four or five channel managers. One had supermarkets. One had, at that time, Service Merchandise was a big company, and they had the discounters. I had all the camera stores. It was about $120 million worth of business that I was responsible for marketing to. There was a sales force that called on them. And I got a cold call one day from a headhunter that said, do you know anybody that might want to be president of a small camera company? And I thought it was my brother-in-law, Russell, and said, you know, kiss my butt. It was much more colorful.
I'm sure.
I'll catch you at Ma's for dinner later. And as I went to hang up the phone, the guy is screaming, no, my... The guy's name was Mark Chappelle. He was with Aegon Zender, which was a Swiss-owned search firm at the time, and they were looking for a new president of Hasselblad. So that's really where I look at. Even though I'd had 17 and a half years prior to joining Hasselblad that were sort of in the photographic industry, where I really look at my career taking off on the pro side was at that point of joining Hasselblad in July of 1987. It was an amazing run. I was with Hasselblad for 12 years until a couple of knuckleheads came into my office that wanted to start an internet company called PhotoAlley.com. And the whole idea was to build a community of educational support and programming and a lot of good online education. But then it was a camera store that was attached to. So if you looked at it at bricks and mortar, you had to walk through the classroom before you could get to the retail store.
Okay.
And the concept worked fantastic. We built it up. Sales went over $30 million. But around 2001, 2002 is right in that window where everybody knows somebody who lost their career because the internet imploded. And the fact that I had all this equity, you know, I had 1 million shares of an internet company. Well, when it implodes, it's worth absolutely nothing. So Photo Alley collapsed. I was out of a job. I remember my accountant giving me a lecture on go collect your unemployment. It's your right. And my foolish pride, I just didn't want to. But standing there in the unemployment line, because it was funny, he threatened to go as me if I didn't go, which I think he'd still be in jail. So there I am standing on an employment line trying to figure out what to do. And I got a call from Steve Sheenan, who was the owner of Rangefinder Publishing, which owned at the time Rangefinder WPPI. And I can't remember the name of it anymore. It was one of the books for the labs, which that was one of the first things we did, was shut that down. And he said, you know, come be president of the company. I'll be chairman of the board and stay out of your hair. And for the next 7 years, working with an incredible team, because we had Bill Herter, who I still believe is the best editor this industry has ever had. Sadly, he passed away a couple years ago. Mm. George Varanakis was there, who a lot of people know from Creative Live and Sue Bryce Education Today. Arlene Evans, we brought in to help run WPPI. And as a team, Bill, George, Arlene, and I just were able to keep building the business. And we had an incredible team of people, you know, underneath us, the staff there. It was a very small company, and people used to think, oh my God, Rangefinder. You know, when they'd come see our offices, and it was one little office with maybe, I don't know, at that point, maybe we had 30 people, 35 people, everybody would be surprised because the company seems so much bigger. When you go to WPPI, you don't really think about the fact that at that time we were, you know, 20, 30 people behind this, behind the curtain. It's like the Wizard of Oz. Don't look behind the curtain.
Right, yeah.
But we had 100 and some volunteers. And that's what really helped build the business and make it stronger. And in 2009, I just didn't agree with some of the things that the owner of the company wanted to do and felt it was time to just see if I could really walk the talk because I'd been living vicariously through all my friends. And in fact, I mean, Shamira, people like you, you know, as an entrepreneur and a business owner, I wanted to go test the water and see what I could do on my own. So I'm sorry, that was actually the short version. So 2009,
that was
I started Marketing Essentials International, which really is just the umbrella I stand under when I like to do just about any project that I want to take on. In 2013, we started Skip Cohen University. I remember Scott Bourne saying to me, what do you think you could do if you just focused everything on one thing? Because I was consulting. I had three different blogs that I was writing for. I was writing for Photo District News. So I had magazine stuff out there, but I hadn't focused on just one thing. And that's where SCU got started, which today has got thousands of articles, not just by me, but guest posts and material by some of the most respected people in the industry. And here I am.
Wow. You know, what I really like about your path is that it's very unconventional. Some of the most interesting people that I have on the show, in my opinion, are the ones who kind of stumble into photography. Now, I'm not knocking anyone or putting down anyone who says that, you know, who knew that they always wanted to be a photographer and they went to school for it. And that's great. But what I find really interesting is having conversations with people who have experience in other things that kind of supplement a photography business. For example, you mentioned you went to night class and you were studying marketing and business and public speaking. I know when I was in college as an art student, hippie person, you know, that was the farthest thing from my mind was anything related to business.
That's why Polaroid was such an important building block because I fell in love with the company and I wanted to keep growing in the company. And I wasn't going to keep growing in the company if I just was going to stay in a lab environment washing bottles. Mm-hmm. And it was a great foundation. But Polaroid gave me an opportunity to take more and more courses. And I always hated the conventional structure of college anyway. When I was at Miami, there was a Greek history course I wanted to take. And they said, well, you can only take it if you're a Greek history major. I said, fine, change my major. So for that semester, I got into Professor Montgomery's class. It was a great class. I absolutely loved it. I wanted to take an educational class. They said, well, you can't take that unless your major is education. And I said, fine, you know, here we go again. So I guess I was always trying to bend the rules because I just didn't fit. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I know the things that I liked to do. And that's where Polaroid became so instrumental. I remember when I was asked to take over the marketing job, that was the last position I held there with all the photo specialty dealers. And I remember saying to the manager that was talking to me, who was VP of the division at the time, and said, I want to put you in this spot. And I said, but I don't know anything about sales. And he burst out laughing and he said, but you've been selling me your ideas for the last 2 years. And you don't, you know, we all think of what direction we're going in. And I don't know. I mean, as an example, there was 1 year at Polaroid that I actually bid on, I don't know, 20 some posts that came up. They had an internal hiring system. And I felt that I had people skills. Mm-hmm. Well, at that time, the only place to have people skills in my mind, and again, being young and stupid, was to go into personnel, which today has morphed into HR. So I kept trying. In fact, when I was caught in two layoffs over the years at Polaroid, and that's another piece. You know, you have to remember your roots. And it's a very humble thing to be caught in a layoff or to be standing in the unemployment line or to simply be sitting there saying, God, I don't know what the hell I want to do. And yet you've got a family and you've got kids and you're trying to think of, all right, I got to support them. I've got to do something to earn a living. So sorry, I got on a soapbox there and just ran with it.
No, definitely, definitely. And yeah, I know what it feels like to be in the unemployment line because like you, I resisted initially. And, you know, back in 2008, there's another time period where everyone has a story. And, but you know, that whole, the whole essence of doing what you have to do to get by and even incorporating these other skills, you mentioned people skills, sales, marketing. That's one of the reasons, one of the many reasons I like chatting with you. It's because we both geek out on the business side of photography, right? I mean, I'm going to stand on a tiny soapbox and venture to say that making a great photograph is all well and good, but that's only a small part of running a photography business, especially if that's your bread and butter and you're trying to pay the bills from it. And so what I have found in my experience is that learning how to take a great photo is easier than running the other business stuff, the other 80%. So making the transition from enthusiast to pro or finding new clients or communicating with people, you know, communicating your value and how you're different from the photographer down the street and what you should price yourself as. And so that's why I'm so excited for us to get into kind of the nuts and bolts of running a photography business, because so many photographers struggle with that. And so you talk to, I couldn't even put a number on how many photographers you've probably talked to in your decades industry. But I'm pretty certain that you have a good handle on what photographers struggle with the most, especially when trying to go pro. And so I'm curious what that is.
There are a couple things that fall under there. In fact, in terms of going pro, it's probably about 2 years ago, I was having lunch with Sarah Petty, and we got into a discussion over, it was a lighthearted argument. And the argument was over whether or not 90% of the photographers in this industry are horrible business owners or 99%. I think I was going 90%. She was the 99. Wow. And the reality is, with the exception of doctors, as far as I'm concerned, the second worst business group on the planet are photographers. Mm. And there is some logical reason for that. If you believe in left brain, right brain, most photographers are artists. That's right brain. Yeah. And they're not as focused on the business accounting, operational side of running a business, which takes a strong left brain. Now, I know there are people out there now that are saying left brain, right brain is bunk. I still love it and believe in it. And when you're off the charts, right brain, and you just want to create, it's hard to remember. It's like what good is creating the finest images of your life if nobody knows who you are?
Absolutely.
Or you can't make a sale, or you're eating macaroni and cheese every night, which actually wouldn't be so bad. I happen to love macaroni and cheese. So anyway, in terms of things that I've seen photographers, you know, struggle with when you talk about that transition to pro, right off the bat, it's your skill set. I mean, we are an industry where even though there are people that think you can't fake it till you make it. Mm. And the reality is that any moron, anybody, can go out and get their first client. That's not the challenge. The challenge is getting clients 2, 3, 4, and 5 to come see you, and getting client one to insist that his or her friends all come talk to you and find out what you're all about. So we're a word of mouth business. And if you don't have the skill set, then just hang it up for a little while until you can build your skill set out, because sooner or later you're going to wind up embarrassed, and there's nothing that spreads faster the negative information, sadly. You know, you can do something good and people are going to tell a bunch of people, but do something horrible that totally pisses somebody off and they're going to go on Facebook and Twitter and they're going to tell everybody. So you've got to have the skill set. And it's, along with the skill set, you've got to practice. Now, I love a line that Roberto Valenzuela gets credit for, that practice doesn't make perfect, only perfect practice makes perfect, because mm-hmm. what if you're practicing it wrong? Mm-hmm. Which totally explains why my golf game sucks. And I can go to the driving range and I can practice, but I'm not with a pro and I'm doing things wrong, and all I'm doing is reinforcing bad habits. Also knowing your gear. Yeah. You've got to know every single component on your gear, especially if you're out there and you're going to be, and let's use weddings as an example. You've got no time. Right. Bambi Cantrell's got a great line about weddings being a time where logic doesn't reign as king. And you're rushed. You don't have control over your environment. You don't have control over your lighting. You better make damn sure you know what you're doing with your gear. Because somebody has trusted you to capture images and tell their story. The other part that I see so often is photographers trying to take it all on. And Jeff Yocum has a great line about learn to right source, not just outsource, but right source. Mm. So where you don't have a good background, and a good example might be, could be building the albums. It could be the business side in terms of accounting. It could be the legal side of getting a lawyer involved so that you've got the backup when somebody is unhappy, or when you're trying to, you want to get a trademark right and you want to lock it in on your business. Go to the right sources. And probably the last one is just that, and maybe it really is number one, photographers don't pay enough attention to their business. They hang out their shingle, which is an old expression. Dean Collins used to say, all you need to do to be a professional photographer is have a roll of duct tape and a Yellow Pages ad. Well, last week, they tried to deliver a Yellow Pages book here, and we got a car pulls up in front of the house, and the guy opens up the back of a station wagon, and he's got a load, or a van. He's got a load of Yellow Pages books. I told him to take it back. I haven't opened a Yellow Pages phone book probably, I'm guessing, 4 or 5 years. And we don't have any little kids in the house, so we don't need those big phone books to sit on at Thanksgiving dinner. So what am I going to do with them? So today, there's so many things that you need to do to make sure that your name is out there. And it comes with social media and probably a bunch of other things that we're going to talk about. But you've got to pay attention to your business. And as we said a few minutes ago, what good is creating stunning images if nobody knows who you are and you can't sell them? Or you do sell them and you're pricing them wrong.
Absolutely.
So that was a very long answer to what should have been like a 1-point question. But
you know, that's something that I could have used even like over a decade ago as a student. Has it been that long? Wow.
And, see?
You know,
but time flies when you're having a good time.
It really does. And at that time, it was all, for me, unicorns, rainbows, very right brain. I mean, I'm left-handed. And so you want to talk about right brain. I live in my right brain. And I absolutely believe that logic, you know, as far as the right brain skills, the left brain skills. And, you know, I've told other photographers that a lot of times you're running a business, it's going to be like an 80-20 split. I mean, it varies for people, but 80% taking care of business and 20% taking photos. Because so many of us step into it and we think we're going to be taking photos all the time, and that it's going to be magical, and that if we do weddings, we're going to go to weddings and everything will actually go according to plan and on schedule. And that is just not the case. And by the way, I don't know what it is about weddings, Skip, but for some reason I get questions from people, email and Facebook, and usually the emails go something like this. I just bought this camera. I'm learning how to use it, and I have a family member who's getting married, and they want me to take wedding photos and be their wedding photographer. Do you have any advice? Really? Of all the gigs to throw yourself into? And I guess it's just that mentality where we focus on the photos as opposed to the other things, as opposed to even, well, yes, knowing your camera gear to the point where it's second nature, right? Because it has to be. But also the other stuff, accounting, legal, having a contract that actually will hold up in court. These things are huge. So I guess for those of us who don't know these things or who are still learning, especially when making that transition from enthusiast to pro, where do they go to get this knowledge? Especially if traditional schools aren't teaching it yet.
Well, go back for just a second on wedding photography, because sure. Wedding photography, I am convinced, is the toughest of the specialties.
It's a beast.
You're not in a studio. You don't have time on your side. Even if you're out there shooting, you know, macro images of bugs and flowers, you've got a little bit of a control in knowing that, all right, if I miss that butterfly, hopefully another one's going to come along.
Right.
Where a wedding is all about trust. And it starts with trust. And then the second component is being able to be a storyteller. And the third one is being able to capture images that wow the client.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. When you brought up, you know, we're talking about wedding photography here. It is where so many people jump in. And it does happen. I mean, first of all, you get a lot of people got involved in photography because their grandmother said at Thanksgiving dinner, I love all your pictures. You should be a photographer.
So
whoa,
true.
That's great. My mom loves them. My dad loves them. Grandma loves them.
It's official.
I'm out there. Yeah, it's official. And all I got to do is go buy the gear. And saying that you're a professional photographer because you bought great gear is like saying you're a race car driver because you just brought a Porsche.
Thank you.
I mean, it's just different. So in terms of places people can go, I mean, there's so much out there. I mean, I'm very proud of what I've built on SCU, and it's all thanks to a lot of contributing writers. So there's a lot of great content on Skip Cohen University. There's a lot of great content on one of your favorites, which is photofocus.com.
Absolutely.
And the things that we do together. I'm a huge fan of Brian Caparici and SproutStudio.com and what they're doing to help photographers run their business. Then there's so much online education. I've got two great courses. Sadly, lynda.com decided they didn't want to go into the marketing side, but there's one on starting your business. There's another one on pricing.
Oh, huge.
Because there's so much that photographers do wrong on pricing. And then there's an awful lot going on that Photodex has and ProShow Web. I mean, I'm blown away by photographers today that are family people photographers and aren't offering slideshows, whether it's a 30-second to 60-second video holiday card you build for your clients, or it's actually a self-promotional marketing piece that you've got. So I'm a big fan of what's out there. And then you've got all the information from all of your various vendors. I mean, SCU is sponsored by companies like, you know, Profoto and Marathon Press and Tamron and Panasonic. And there's so much material that each one of those companies are sharing to help photographers become better artists. So there's a lot out there. And then let's not forget, you know, hands-on live stuff like Shutterfest and getting to WPPI and Imaging USA and PPE coming up this, you know, October, November in New York. So there's a lot there.
Absolutely. I will be linking to many of those resources on the show notes for our listeners as well. And so earlier you mentioned that it's easy to get client number one, especially when it is a grandparent or a family member or a friend. But as far as getting clients number two, three, four, and five, and so on, what have you found to be some of the most effective techniques for bringing in these new assignments?
Yeah, there are a couple. One is get involved in your community.
Mm.
People like buying products and services from companies they perceive as giving back. And I'd love to take credit for that. But it's all from guerrilla marketing, you know, 101. It's such a great way. Your community needs to know that you're not just another retailer.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it starts with getting involved in the community with or without your camera. You may be photographing the Alzheimer's walk, for example, which I think is just about to take place, or maybe I missed it right here in Sarasota. You may be taking pictures of the event, or you could be there on Friday night football games and you're handing people hot dogs because you're supporting the boosters group for the high school.
Mm.
It's being involved. It's letting people know that you're not just a taker and you're giving back to the community. And the reality is that everybody is looking for their community to be good to them. So you better make damn sure that you're good to the community and giving back. And that becomes a piece of it. Now, that's only one brick in the foundation, because in addition to that, I really believe you need a good website. And I also believe you need a blog. And the difference is that a website is about what you sell, where your blog is about what's in your heart. And the two of them reinforce each other. So being able to maintain a website and a good blog and keep the balance there. And one of the great things about having a blog, or one of the most important things, is consistency. You can't post once every full moon. You've got to be out there at least twice a week minimum with things that interest your readers. So that becomes a piece of it. And then one of the things that photographers always forget about is partnerships with other vendors in the community. Mm. I get really excited when I see a photographer and a florist, for example, that might be cross-promoting with each other. Or maybe it's a mailing. Maybe, I mean, direct mail is kind of back with a vengeance because there's so much email we throw out on a regular basis. But printing a really nice-looking, oversized postcard, and you're a photographer, and let's use weddings because it's just so easy to talk about the partners, and you're going to bring in a bridal salon and a florist, and the three of you split the cost of the postcard, you split the cost of the mailing, and what happens is that each entity becomes an ambassador for the other two. Mm-hmm. So you're working together, and you're not competing directly, although you are competing for the amount of money the bride has. But being able to work together gives you the ability to have a much louder voice. And then the last one I love, which is really from my buddy, our buddy, Scott Bourne, is pound the pavement and own your zip code.
Yes.
And get out and knock on doors. And I'm talking about primarily retailers. For example, you're a wedding photographer and people will say, well, why would I go in to see the local realtor? Well, you're going to go in to see the realtor and say, hey, my specialty is wedding photography. I'm relatively new in the neighborhood. Just want to introduce myself. But even though most of what I shoot is weddings, I can help you with any photographic needs you've got. So if you're ever stuck for anything from a headshot to architectural to you name it, at least give me a call. Even if I can't do it, I've got a great network to draw from. And I have friends and associates that can. And you just never know what's going to come out of that. And it's just it's a great way. You want to build your reputation. You want to be involved in the community, but you can't do it if nobody knows who you are.
You know, that's huge. And just to pick out a couple points from your answer there. So the owning your own zip code and also being involved in your community, you know, those go hand in hand. And here in Port Huron, especially, I haven't lived here for, it's not even been 2 years yet. And moving in, I knew it would be somewhat of a challenge to build myself up in the community as far as establishing myself as a photographer. I've been doing it for many years before then, but new location. I was also switching gears from more family portraiture to business-focused photography. And one of my initial thoughts was, well, there are a million photographers in the area and some very nice studios. And so how am I going to make a name for myself? And what I found was that in getting involved in the community, which went anywhere from, say, joining the Chamber of Commerce and actually attending their meetings, or even attending ribbon-cutting ceremonies, for example, which I love those because you're essentially showing up to support another business. So every time a new business opens here and they're part of the chamber, they get a ribbon-cutting ceremony. And so you get all these people, you show up to support this business and to meet them and to welcome them to the community. I found that not many photographers were doing that. As many as we have in the area, and I'm sure Port Huron is not unique in this aspect. We have a lot of photographers, but as far as the community involvement, a lot of times I would be the only photographer at these community events. And it certainly does go a long way when people get the sense that you care, and you should genuinely care, right? You shouldn't be faking it. And so, you know, that has been huge for me as well. And oh, partnerships. I'm so glad you brought that up too. Because that is essentially, they become your marketing team, right? If you're a wedding photographer, so you have
That's
relationships
right.
with florists and a wedding dress designer and wedding planner, or even if you're into business headshots, then I found web designers to be very helpful because a lot of times when they're dealing with a client, that client will need images for their website, business images, or even billboard companies. That's been an interesting one. I've been contacted by one where, they get clients all the time, businesses, and they need a photographer. Or they'll have a crappy cell phone shot, and they'll say, oh, put this up on the billboard. And the billboard company's like, no, we'll recommend a photographer for you. And that goes so far, just so far, in getting your name out there.
So, well, you and I did a podcast a while back with Bob and Dawn Davis.
Yeah.
And you remember they talked about, and Bob and Dawn are, they're an amazing couple and they're phenomenal artists. And when Bob shoots a wedding, he will send pictures to the caterer.
Yeah.
to the venue, and he will send them with a photo credit and essentially say, hey, you know, they're yours with our blessings. Enjoyed working with you guys. Well, that's an outrageous in terms of building that network and getting referrals, because that caterer, who most of the time the caterer themselves aren't necessarily going to be at the event, and they've got a staff, and you know, here's this beautiful display that a couple has spent God knows how many hours trying to decide what they want for a buffet or for the bar or for the dessert or whatever. Yeah. And here's the photographer that's saying, hey, I just wanted to share these images with you. And, you know, there's a photo credit there. Well, that's another one that builds the relationship. And same with the florist and the venue. So
exactly. Yeah. There's so much more that we can do besides social media, which, I mean, social media has its place. But real life, in person, face-to-face interaction is huge. And so, you know, speaking of social media, I'm sure you've noticed, Skip, that there is a flood of images on the internet, on social media, Facebook alone. I mean, you know, Instagram, all that stuff. And it seems like every day new people are coming out and saying that they're a photographer or they're hanging up their shingle, as you put it. And so my question to you is, how can we stand out from the sea of other photographers in our area?
Well, let's start out with some of the most obvious. On the social media side, and you, since you brought up, you know, Facebook and people looking at your website, the thousands of photographs that are out there, everybody needs to clean up their galleries. Get rid of images that are just there because you thought you had to show a whole lot of images. You really don't need, I don't believe you need any more than 6 to 10 images under any particular category to show your work. But I always like to say, if it's not a wow print or a wow image, then don't show it. And the definition of a wow print is one that's so good, it's the only image you'd have to show to get hired. Mm. So if you were going to interview for a job, or you were going to go talk to a client, and it all involved photography and them hiring you, think about whether or not you've got that one image that's so good, that's the only one they need to see. Now, I know that people need to see more, but it does put the emphasis on how the, what the quality is. And when I go in, wow, it's rare, because I look at websites all the time, and I have looked at thousands of websites, and they range from bad images to too many images. And if your images aren't better than Uncle Harry, then why is anybody going to hire you? Absolutely. If Uncle Harry got it, then you need to be better. So that's one piece. The other piece is...
Can I just add
go ahead. Yes.
Really quickly, that sometimes it's important to get an outside opinion on your images, because so many of us are emotionally tied to images that are our favorites. And so sometimes it involves getting another friend or someone. I recommend someone who's not your mother, or, you know,
it's not a relative.
Right, right. And even, for example, Skip was looking at my website yesterday, and he pointed out a photo that I'd been on the fence about. It is the funny thing, but I was emotionally, there was something about the photo that I liked. And so he pointed it out and said, that's not a good image. And you know, it took that though. It took him saying that to really, and I still need to take it down actually at the time of this recording, but it was just yesterday. But you know, a lot of times as photographers, we get kind of blinded by the effort it took to make a certain photo or the story of that client. And that should not overpower the image itself. And so when you need to get a second opinion, you should do so.
Absolutely. Other pieces in terms of how do you stand out? Photography is a word of mouth business. You've got to build a strong brand, and that can only happen if you exceed client expectations. So there are things that are very basic that are, you know, keep your promises. I talked about being involved in the community, mm-hmm. learn to give back, develop a strong blog. A strong blog doesn't mean that you've got to show more images that would normally be in your gallery. It means share content that will help your readership. Now, for the most part, 98% of the purchase decisions to hire a photographer in the portrait social categories are made by women. Yes. And this goes back to a Kodak survey that was done over 20 years ago, and I don't believe it's moved one inch. Now, in the corporate world, that's changed. Images are chosen and photographers are selected by product managers, by marketing managers, by ad agencies, and that can change. But for the most part, when you talk about the portrait social, which is weddings, seniors, family, children, babies, the decision maker is typically mom, or in the case of wedding, the bride and mom. Mm-hmm. And everybody needs to remember that beauty is in the eyes of the checkbook holder, which is something I've always loved. That's Dean Collins' line. When you develop a strong blog, you want to share images that get people excited. You want to be helpful. You want to share. I mean, one of the things I love is to suggest that when photographers are looking for content ideas, and I did an article for Shutter Magazine not too long ago that was a list of ideas for blog content. And one of the things that's really good is just be helpful. Be the photo expert. Mm-hmm. Teach mom the things that you do every single day and never think about, and that's how to get a good picture of the kids. Talk about grouping. Every professional photographer knows to set up. If you've got, let's say, three or more, you're going to set them up and do their heads in triangles, as opposed to, you know, the firing squad lineup, you know, shoulder to shoulder, straight across.
Right.
Talk about lighting. Talk about backlighting. Help mom understand, even if she's taking the picture with a cell phone, and you get some pretty damn good shots these days with a cell phone, teach her when it might be appropriate to flip the flash on and get a little fill flash. Just be helpful. And that's going to help you stand out along with a strong blog and just being helpful to your readership. Now, obviously, we talked about images before. I'm a huge fan of Facebook images and Instagram and all those ways that you can share them with your clients. But you have to go back to remembering that if it's not a wow image, then don't share it. Just showing the same images that everybody else does isn't going to help you drive the business.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Or even showing images that are incongruent with the type of business that you want to bring in. And, you know, it took the longest time. It's funny because it took the longest time for me to take down. I had this really sweet image of, I don't know what kind of car it was, but it was taken at the Detroit Auto Show. And so, nice clean background, the lighting was great, and it was the only car image I had on my site, even though I was advertising family portraiture at the time. So this was a handful of years ago. And I was just so tied to that image. It had nothing to do with the rest of my portfolio. And I'm sure it was pretty darn confusing for people.
Yep.
But
but that's another piece of it. That's another piece of that business side of, you know, I see it all the time. You've got a photographer that's doing weddings, but they love doing, I don't know, tabletop or macro work of bugs or landscapes.
Yes.
And they confuse the audience. Because if mom comes in and she just happens to land on your product page because you did some beautiful still life, she's going to walk. In the same respect, if an ad agency is looking to hire somebody that does some really beautiful still life and they come to your website, but they go into the wedding section, that rep at the ad agency is going to be shut off and they're going to go look elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
It goes back to common sense in the way you combine specialties on your website. People all work together. There is some fine art that can work together with those people shots. Just use some common sense and think about who's going to look at your site. One great story. I can't remember whose website, and it's embarrassing because I should know. I was reviewing somebody's website, and I made a comment because they had a whole bunch of awards that they'd won. And I said, you know, unless you've won the Pulitzer, don't list your awards. Mm-hmm. And he said, Skip, look down on the bottom. And the guy had won a Pulitzer. Now, my issue then became, well, why isn't it number one? Because that's all that needs to be there.
Right.
I mean, that is,
wow.
That's the gold chalice. There it is. You got it. One of the things that I love is doing portraits of people in the community. And that is so easy to do because you could take a day right now, tomorrow, if you don't have anything on your calendar, go out and pick five establishments that you enjoy in the community and get kind of an environmental portrait of the owner. I mean, everybody's got a favorite pizza parlor.
Mm-hmm.
No matter where you live and no matter how short or long a time you've been there, you've got a place you really enjoy for pizza. And it might be Pizza Hut. It might be a privately owned place. It doesn't make any difference. Talk to the manager, the owner, and go in and get an environmental portrait of the kitchen crew or somebody making a pizza, or maybe it's your favorite waiter or waitress or hostess or host at a particular, you know, restaurant you like to go to. Maybe it's the pharmacist at the local CVS, Walgreens, whatever. It could be your dry cleaner. Like I said, everybody's got a small group of retailers that they work with in the community. Now, being able to show an image and then go in and just write about, hey, I really love, you know, every chance we get, we go to Shamara's Pizza, and here's a picture of Shamara, and we love this place. I always like to get their, you know, double sausage, extra cheese, artery clogging, whatever, and pitch it that way. Now what happens when that runs, you also print out a hard copy. You wander back into your establishment and say, hey, I just want to show you what's on my blog today. On the top, just like magazines at trade shows, you'll see an ad and it'll say, as featured this month in Shutter Magazine. Mm-hmm. Let's say, just in the same way, do that same thing. Put it in one of those $3 plexiglass frames that it just slides in from the side. They're going to put it on the counter. They're going to tell everybody about, wow, did you see my picture today? I'm on Shamara's website. See, now I've made idea. You into the pizza place, right. And the photographer.
Right.
But the point is that
multi-talented.
It's a great way to be able to support your community. You could do pets of the community. You could do kids of the community, but you want to be really, really careful with model releases. And there are too many awful things today in the world with children. So, you know, if you're going to do any kind of children's photo contest or anything that relates to kids in the community, then you just want to make sure you've covered all your bases so that you're protected. And more importantly, they're protected and not doing anything that's too far out there. So it's getting the community involved in things you're doing on the blog. And as that gets launched, it picks up more and more momentum.
What I really like about that is that it's proactive. As opposed right. to waiting for these nebulous clients to come to you, you go out and you make your own magic in the community, which is really great.
Yeah, it's also a bottomless bucket of ideas because you've got so many different. I mean, you could do the guy at the produce department. We've got a new Sprouts market that opened up here. And there's one guy that every time we walk in, hands us a sample of a tangerine or something. At the public supermarket, I used to laugh. There was this little lady, I think her name is Kathy, who must have been 90 years old, who was the cheese lady who was doing cheese samples. And I actually introduced her to Sheila one day saying, honey, you should know this is the other woman in my life. And I mean, it's, and every time Kathy hands me a cheese to try, I'm over, next thing you know, I'm over buying that cheese. Well, that's another profile. It's another face in the community. And there's so many. Everybody's in a community where you've got people that you interact with every single day.
I love it. How cool. Well, before we wrap up, is there, we've kind of mentioned quite a few photography resources, but is there any that we haven't mentioned that you really want our listeners to know about?
Well, obviously, Skip Cohen University and Photo Focus, but we've really already talked about it. The point is that there's so much great content out there, but you also need to remember, and this is another resource, you need to go to every possible convention that you can go to, because nothing compares with being able to build your network face to face. And your network is more than just collecting names and business cards. It's actually getting to know people. And when you sit down at a conference or a convention, you're sitting there at a platform speaker, everybody typically sits down and stares straight ahead, waiting for the speaker to start. Introduce yourself to the person on your left and the person on your right. Pick up the phone when you're challenged and call your lab and say, hey, what's new? You know, people forget that everybody at the labs, the frame companies, the album companies, they talk to thousands of photographers every week. And you may be having a problem that you just can't figure out how to resolve, but you call somebody that's, you know, at your lab and say, hey, I'm having a problem with this. That person you're talking to, they may have talked to a photographer 2 minutes, you know, you live in Ohio and they were just on the phone with somebody in Alabama who had a similar problem. There's such great resources. And, you know, I think about the staff over and people that I know and have worked with a lot over at ProPhoto or at Marathon, for example, and they're talking to photographers all the time. So being able to have them in your network, and the only way you get them in your network is to go to a convention and literally get to know as many people as you can at all the companies whose products and services you use. And then comes the educational side, and then comes just the camaraderie that comes out of getting to know more photographers. You know, there are only so many weddings and portraits and things you can shoot before something is in the way on your calendar. Mm-hmm. And you need to have those resources. Or better yet, you've got a camera that just jammed or a flash that something just crashed. And man, you've got a wedding coming up in an hour and a half and you don't know what to do.
No.
You need that network. You need to be involved in your local photographic guild or whatever chapter there is of a PPA affiliate, for example, that's in your community, or ASP or ASMP, whatever association you want to get involved in. You need to be involved in that. And that ties into building your network some more too. So, you know, you ask me these simple questions and I should just have one word answers. And there aren't one-word answers, because the reality is that you can't create images that tug at people's heartstrings if your heart isn't in it. And to keep your heart in it, that's how you build your network. That's how we all watch each other's backs and we all support each other. And I mean, that's why I have such a good, great time with you on Mind Your Own Business and doing the podcast, because you've given me lots of ideas. And we come from very different backgrounds. You've been out there 10 years. I've been out there, I'm not going to go how long.
A few more.
Yeah, I'm old. I think I'm at this point now, I'm old enough to probably certainly be your father, maybe grandfather. I'm not great-grandfather material yet, so that's good.
not quite.
But there's all this experience that we share, and the only way this industry can grow and the only way you can have a healthy business is to develop those relationships. And as you've heard me say before, the best thing about this industry has nothing to do with photography. It's about the friendships that come out of everyone's love for the craft.
Well said. I couldn't think of a more perfect way to end this interview, actually. And you should write a book. Oh, wait, you already have.
Actually, I'm working on my own. I've done six of them that I've co-authored with some amazing people and very proud of everything that we did. But I finally decided it's time for me to start doing some of my own stuff. So
there's one
in the works. God only knows when it'll show up. But
wow. Well, let me know when
you
it
got
does.
It.
Yeah, I would love to announce that to the world. How cool. Well, before we go, where is the absolute best place to find you online?
Well, obviously my email is skip@mei500.com. Mm-hmm. And Skip Cohen University, I post stuff every single day, and Skip Cohen on Facebook and Twitter.
Awesome.
And I am obsessive when it comes to getting back to people. Unless they've asked some real, no, I won't even say, even the dumb questions usually get answered.
That's awesome. I can attest to that. Yes, he does get back to you very quickly. And thank you, Skip, for just taking the time to chill and chat with us. It's always such a pleasure just talking with you.
Well, it's fun hanging out with you. And I appreciate everything that you're doing to give back to the industry. And boy, if you just think about all the photographers out there that we know that are new and getting into it, you know, it's sort of like, listen to things that Shamira and I share with you. And learn from our mistakes so that you can go make new ones all your own.
If you're enjoying this podcast, I ask that you please leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you're listening. The more reviews we get, the easier it is for people to find this podcast in search rankings. We want to reach as many people as possible and help improve our photo industry. I appreciate you all. Thanks for listening.